You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
It's been a minute.
It has been a minute.
We haven't recorded in a while. You've been getting episodes every week.
Yeah.
But we took a lot happened in the month. For our lives.
Yeah, we've had a busy few weeks here.
It's been wild.
But I'm happy to be back.
We're happy to be back. And you know where you are. Welcome to Desperate. This is a podcast where two unwed ladies talk about all the drama on Wisteria Lane, recapping the show Desperate Housewives. I'm Julia, and I am watching this series for the first time and loving every second of it.
And I'm Jordan, and I'm rewatching the series for like the fifth time, but it has been a long time. So I am enjoying this revisit.
I've been really impressed by your ability to keep secrets about what's going to happen. Because as we continue going forward, there's things that are revealed and you've been acting like, what? But you knew. You've seen it like five times.
It's hard. Like, there's definitely been certain storylines that I wanted to, like, just let loose. But I want you to experience it the way we all did when it was first premiering. So, obviously, the internet spoils certain things. But, yeah. Like, there are good twists that you haven't been spoiled from yet. So, it's super fun seeing your reactions. It's also interesting because I don't always remember exactly how we get to certain plot points. So it's fun kind of watching that. But yeah, no, like this has been an experience and I'm doing my best to keep my trap shut. But it gets harder, I feel like, as the more I remember stuff, like stuff sparks me and I'm like, oh, shit, we're going down that path already.
We're cleaning off foggy memories.
Mm-hmm. Like, these are like deep pull. These are filed away deep in my brain.
Yes. For me, it's like when I see an episode of Law and Order where I'm like, it's ingrained in my head, but then I see it on TV again. And I'm like, oh, crap. It was way crazier than I remember.
Yeah.
And there's all the little details that come back. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, my gosh. But we've been having a blast. And we hope that you're watching along, per mm-hmm. usual. I feel like, I don't know, I've been like looking at who's listening. I think people are just starting in the middle. I don't know if anybody's, like, they're starting to listen to our podcast in the middle. Can't confirm or deny. I don't know who's listening, but we're happy if you jumped in.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you start at the episode where we start Desperate Deeds, because that's where we really take shape.
Definitely. I think that's where we get, like, a structure to the episodes a little better. But I do recommend listening to all of our episodes.
Yeah.
Just to kind of get context for everything, because we do reference stuff that we've said in other episodes, and
True. And
we're just really funny.
Yeah, and we just have jokes.
Yeah.
But you can watch along on Hulu or Amazon Prime. That's up to you. You don't have to watch along. You can just listen to us. Mm-hmm. Listen to any episode, listen to them all. You can do that on any platform, really. We're pretty much on them all. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, yep. Wherever. We drop every Monday, so hopefully you're listening and today is Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And we just really value your feedback as well. So if you want to rate, review, subscribe, like, follow, do whatever, we're available on everywhere. You can find us. You have Google.
Yeah.
Maybe,
look us up.
Maybe Bing.
Yeah.
You can
is that a thing Bing. Still? Bing?
I don't know.
People Bing stuff?
I can't. It's embarrassing. Okay, I'll say we're not even to our Desperate Deeds section. Somebody was trying to airdrop me a contact for some reason. I was like, can you give me your landlord's name? I was apartment hunting. And mm-hmm. I was like, can you give me his info? And I might hit him up. The guy tries to airdrop it to me, which I think is psychotic, because I had my phone open to, for him to put the number in, and he airdrops it.
Yeah.
That's not bad. It's weird that he did that, but then I try to accept the airdrop, and it takes me to the app store, and my phone asks me to download contacts. Like, I didn't have contacts on my phone.
That's too much work.
It was.
That's too much. No, I'm never downloading an app to open something someone sent me.
It was crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah, either way. Sorry, just how did you guys know? But go rate and review us forever. Subscribe, like, follow.
Yeah.
But download something for us. I don't know. It might come up on your phone. And that's pretty much our housekeeping. Usually we try to bug you about that. But we do enjoy hearing all of you reach out. We are in 8 countries. People across the globe are listening. We're so excited. I think we've said before we were happy to have no one listen almost. The guy who helped produce our first episode.
Yeah, we're
like, he listened to our test episode.
Yeah, if we can get one, maybe 2 people, we're happy. So, but no, we've gone global, international. Yeah. So... tell your friends.
Yeah, we're happy that you're here. We are part of the Desperate Housewives fandom. This has given me a lot to look forward to every week and a lot to look forward to as we exit our global pandemic eventually. Desperate Housewives never dies. It doesn't age well, but it
doesn't, die. It's like your really old grandparent.
Yeah. We are having a birthday party for my great grandmother, which you're invited to.
Oh, wow. Always. Thank you.
I don't even know how to say that. I just don't think you want to go. It's coming up. She's turning 103. My great grandmother. She's just a vessel, is what I call her. Yes. She's a vessel without a soul.
Damn.
She's a vegetable. But yes, that's what Desperate Housewives is like. It doesn't age well. But what's going to come up is we're going to recap what happened in episode 13, which was called Your Fault.
Yep.
I love that. And then, just so we're aware of where we're starting at our jumping off point, then we're going to go into our Desperate Deeds to get you warmed up for what we might see.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait for one of our Desperate Deeds to overlap directly with what we see in the episode.
Just by chance.
Yeah, just by chance. And then we go into our full recap of episode 14, which we're reviewing today. It's called Love is in the Air. So very excited for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do a fuck, marry, kill, potentially a would you rather one day.
Mm-hmm.
And we do an apple rating of 5 apples where we thought it fell on a spectrum of quality. And then we choose a housewife of the week. And that's just based on who we thought really showed some big cojones.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
So, there's not a real criteria for it.
There's no criteria. Mm-hmm. We literally just nominate somebody and then choose one.
It's together. A gut feeling.
Yeah, maybe I should make the criteria like a bracket or whatever. How we
who
grade.
Fell into this category this week?
We might make a drinking game. That would be fun.
That would be fun.
A drinking game. So the options are endless. But first things first, we're going to talk about episode 13, where we've been.
Mm-hmm.
And episode 13 didn't have really a cohesive theme. It was just about these interpersonal relationships, I guess.
Yeah.
It's called Your Fault. And I guess looking back, maybe some people grappled with whose fault things were, like Brie and Rex. Mm-hmm. Brie had a major moment of contemplating, like, if she should take Rex back and, and if it's fair. And maybe, I mean, he did cheat on her. That is his fault. But I think she grappled with something around who's really guilty there.
Mm-hmm.
So that happened. Basically, she goes to this diner with, and she's hanging out because her and Rex are arguing about who gets what in their divorce settlement. And he's like, let's even the playing field. You can sleep with somebody. And she's like, I don't really want to do that, but maybe. And then she goes to this diner to contemplate it. Crazy George, the pharmacist who she broke up with 2 episodes ago, shows up fondling a knife.
Yeah, that's right. He does fondle a knife.
And then he sits down with her and they talk for like hours until 1 or 2 in the morning. And she talks about how she was in the Young Republicans Club.
Mm-hmm.
That's how she met Rex. So you know this is a fucked up marriage from the beginning. And then he's like, well, do you think he's a good person? And Bree's like, yeah. And I'm like, what? Why?
It's so back and forth. Like, I don't know. The writing about, like, Brie and Rex is, like, so back and forth. Like, 1 minute she's angry with him, 1 minute she's not. 1 minute he hates her, another minute he wants to get back together. Like, it is a bit confusing, and I felt like this episode kind of hit that.
Gave me whiplash, especially that George was like, go be with him.
He was like, if you really love somebody, like, you'll try to make it work or whatever.
George, who watches her on videotapes from the pharmacy. Crazy. Yes. The incel energy George was like, go be with Rex.
Yeah.
And then Bree says the most insulting line you can say and is like, I hope you find someone special. You deserve that. Says that to the guy that wanted to fuck her. horribly bad, terribly. He wanted to fuck her so badly. Like,
yeah. And as far as she knew, was like a good guy. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. She knows that Rex is a fucking cheating ass bitch.
She doesn't know that George is crazy. But that's where we net out. And then Rex walks into the pharmacy and like tries to talk shit to George. And George
tries to like intimidate him.
Yeah. It doesn't, I don't know if it quite works because George does snap back. He says, I think Bree doesn't know what's up. Mm-hmm. She's not very perceptive. She doesn't see that you're a bad guy. And then George also, it looks like he switches Rex's prescriptions.
I mean, he takes like Rex's prescription and dumps it.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming he's putting something he's else like, in there.
Look forward to another heart attack, bitch.
Yeah. Like,
yes. So that's where Bree is. And then Susan had a long ass storyline with Julie and Zach. Julie's going to a dance with Zach, but Susan's not into Zach. Susan thinks Zach's crazy, and mm-hmm. she's probably right. He's a toxic man, as I've said time and again. And she's like, I don't like that you're going to the dance with him. And Julie's like, fuck off a little bit. And then Susan decides to chaperone the dance because what else was she going to do but intervene? Yeah. And then at the dance, she catches up with, well, first she confronts Paul, and he's wearing a really good-looking sweater.
Paul looked low-key hot in the last episode, and I don't know how to feel about that.
He was a hot older man. He looked fucking hot, yeah. And the best Paul's ever looked. He's got that, like, post Mary Alice glow. He's, like, back on the market.
Yeah, he was, like, weirdly sure of himself. I don't know how to describe it.
He smirked. He's hitting the gym, probably.
Is this a sign that we're aging, that we find men like that, like, attractive?
He's a homeowner.
Yeah. He is a homeowner. I don't know what he does for a living, yeah, but he clearly makes money.
I actually don't know.
They've never talked about it.
Susan goes to Paul and is like, we need to break them up. They can't be together. And Paul is like, whatever, they're teenagers. What do you think? But he's also not worried because he's like, we're moving. The house sold. Zach Buston is like, what, Dad? You didn't tell me. Paul's like, wasn't important. Then the dance happens. Susan chaperones. Paul is there also chaperoning. I don't know. And they dance too closely, Susan and Paul. He, like, grabs her butt, basically.
Yeah,
and
that shit was weird.
They talk about Dana because Susan overheard on the phone call between Julie and Zach about Dana. Because mm-hmm. Zach, for probably the 50th time, was like, you didn't tell anybody. Julie was like, no. Susan overhears. She learns about Dana. Paul says Zach didn't mean to kill Dana and, like, confirms this story that Zach has been weaving, that he killed his baby sister, Dana. Then, after the dance, Paul and Zach are in the car, and Paul is like, actually, Dana's alive. What's up? And Zach is like, what do you mean? They go home, and Zach is like, actually, now that I know this information, we're not moving, motherfucker.
He turns around and blackmails him.
He blackmails his dad, and then the next day, he's feeling extra confident because of that. And he marches over to Susan's house and is like, what's up with Julie? And Susan's like, she's in the shower, but also, I don't want you to see her anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm over this. And then basically Zach like throws a table.
Yeah, he like lashes out very aggressively at Susan.
And Susan's like, point proven, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And
she like bans him from seeing Julie.
Yeah. So that's where we ended up there.
It's important to know too, basically when Paul does tell Zach that Dana's alive, we don't actually hear what the full story is. Mm-hmm. They like cut to the next scene. So Zach, I don't know what he told. We don't know what he told Zach, basically.
Yeah, no idea.
So that is part of that. And then Gabby's story was kind of weird. John's parents roll up, and the dad's a little too nice to her. And they basically ask Gabby, like, they need to convince John to go to college because he wants to drop out so he can, like, expand his lawn mowing business or whatever. So he could provide for Gabby. She, like, goes over there, and he proposes to her. John's parents find out, tell her she needs to give the ring back. She obviously is going to, but, like, the whole thing, I guess, caught her off guard. She has a weird heart-to-heart with John's dad, where he was basically, like, jealous of my son that he got to fuck you. Okay, cool.
He had a monologue, and I kept being like, why do we don't care about John's dad.
No, it was weird. And then Gabby, like, returns the ring and basically tells John, like, I love Carlos. And she's, like, sad about it, but she's just trying to end it, yeah, I guess.
He throws a fucking
He has a little vase tantrum
or something. Yeah, at the fireplace in his apartment.
That in we his don't bedroom.
Know. Yeah, I don't know what.
I don't know what's going on with that apartment.
So, like, why did she take? Yes, questions were left. Why did she take the ring in the first place? But
I don't know. and then, last but not least, Lynette's father-in-law rolls up, played by Ryan O'Neal, who used to be really hot, not so hot anymore.
Looking weathered.
Yeah. And basically she catches him
cheating in her living room.
Yeah, fucking some lady in her living room.
Lois.
Yeah.
Lois McDaniel.
And then it turns out that, like, he's been cheating kind of the whole, like, forever, and Tom is aware of it, which obviously Lynette does not love all this. Especially when her father-in-law gives her a whole speech about how, like, he's on the road all the time and with the kids and the wife, it gets basically.
He pretends he's a victim.
Yes, and while being a victim, and, it, like, the excuse for his behavior is that he's living the life that essentially Tom is living.
Yeah.
So Lynette gets, like, kind of uncomfortable by that.
Yeah.
And they have a talk, and it is what it is, and then it ends with Tom going downstairs and talking to his dad and basically saying there's something that Lynette doesn't know, and if she finds out, like, she's gonna, it'll, like, ruin her life.
I'm nervous.
And we don't know what it is.
Left on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, because basically Lynette says to him, like, if you ever did what your dad does, like, I would take your kids and you never see me or your kids again. And she, like, fucking.
Yeah.
She's scary. But I respect it. I respect it. That's the energy Bree needs.
She got her housewife of the week last week. Because that was, I mean, she kicked them both out at one point. Mm-hmm. And then she throws down and. Yeah, Brie needs that energy.
Yeah.
But I love that her and Brie are, like, besties.
Yeah.
Like, cute. They're yang.
For sure. But it was a good episode. I actually liked that story with Lynette. It gave her a little bit of meat to chew on.
Yeah, we love when Lynette can have anything to chew on. Yeah. Because she's, I mean, I'm expecting it to be lame this episode.
I don't know. I don't know. Storylines are always so.
But they're always whatever. So that's where we were at. We're left with quite a few mysteries. The trunk. Mike's investigating that thing for that guy about Deidre.
Mm-hmm. Who is Dana?
Yeah, who is Dana? What happened to... I mean, no. I'm like, we're pretty caught up with all our characters right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still Angela, Mary Alice Young. We kind of forgot that she killed herself episode one. This point, there's quite a few mysteries. Mm-hmm. Oh, the jewelry in Mike's garage.
Oh, yeah.
From Mrs. Martha Huber dying.
Yeah.
Mrs. Martha Huber's still dead. We didn't talk about her.
Yeah. But there wasn't really a lot of Martha in the episode. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of talk about her.
So that's where we're at. With that being said, we can get into our desperate deeds.
Yeah. You want me to go?
You can go first.
Okay. My desperate deed is actually borrowed from a friend of mine. She,
I'm like, is it me?
Well, she was looking for a new job and she got one and she had a drug test for it. And it had not been that long since she had drug tested. So this girl did, she was chugging water like crazy for a weekend. She did a detox, a full detox. She ordered like cranberry pills and shit to flush her out. It's not me. This one actually isn't me.
I looked at her and I'm like, this is you?
No, it's not me, actually. My whole department at my job quit, so we found new jobs.
Yeah.
But she had to do, like, I found this article and sent it to her of, like, all the different things you could try to do to try and flush weed out of your system if it hasn't been long enough. It worked. She passed.
Can they still not hire you about weed?
If they want to.
Wow.
Isn't that fucked up?
Fucking narcs.
Stupid.
Stupid as fuck.
It's not fair. It sucks because it's like illegal. It's like if they tested for alcohol in California.
Yeah, in California. It's the same. Yeah, if you guys don't know, we're in LA area.
Yeah, weed's legal here. So
weed's legal.
I don't personally think like...
Dude, my...
I think if you're going to test for weed, you also have to test for alcohol. Like, that's a weird double standard to me.
Well, yeah, given your desperate deed now, I've changed my entire desperate deed. We're going to talk about weed today.
Anyway, I just thought it was funny. She's lost like 5 pounds in this process. So.
I'm like, maybe we need to do that.
I know, maybe we should try it.
Hot girl summer is coming. My boyfriend's waking me up after.
For real though, no. So I'm proud of her. She got the job. She passed the test. I don't know if it worked or if she just hadn't smoked.
It was probably just
so
like
much
out
weed
of
that
her.
It didn't. Yeah,
like out of her system. She wasn't even like a regular smoker. That's the type of panic I would have.
Oh. And I just got a new job, and I was panicked. It's been over a month.
I don't even smoke weed.
Like, I take an edible occasionally.
Yeah.
But, like,
once in a while, if it's around, I'm like, I guess. So I try and be cool. I'm that person. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I get, it's around.
I'm not, like, a heavy, but I feel that paranoia if you're up for something, and that's, like, the one thing in your way. Like, but it was funny.
Well,
her dedication, I was impressed.
I'm impressed. I'm glad she got the job. Congrats to her.
Yeah.
Hope she's making way more money.
She is making more money, so
it's not always the case.
Oh, yeah.
And your company's like, why did you leave? I'm like, money?
You're like, the only reason I work is for money, so.
Capitalism. Yes, my desperate deed, she took a 180 here. I forgot, because I was like, we were like, everybody smokes weed in California. It's true. My old boss smoked weed in front of me. We went on, like, a shoot or something for this project, and it was my nightmare. I had to spend a weekend with them. Not even a weekend. I had to spend my weekdays with them in a cabin in Big Bear. And, like, it was okay. They were trying to be cool. But then, like, before we leave, like, one of the producer guys who just, like, talked about Patagonia the whole time, he just, like...
It was, like, the biggest stereotype of all time.
Type of person in California that just talks about, like, all the cool gear and shit that they have for this and that. And it's, like, I don't fuck with that person.
Yeah.
But I have to sometimes for work. And, like,
you gotta do what you
he
gotta
was
do.
That guy. But then also, I guess he was a huge pothead. And so, like, before we all leave to head out, he, like, literally rolled up a joint or something. And I was, like, what the fuck is happening? I don't want to smoke. Like, I've never not wanted to smoke with people more in my life. And my boss, I would say this is pretty desperate to be cool. He, like, hit it a bunch of times, and then he, like, repeatedly offered it to me. And I was like, I just don't want to smoke with you. And this is, like, a 50-year-old man. Like, he turned 50 this year. He was not cool. Like, I hate
trying to pass the ball around? What the heck?
Yeah, he was trying to, like, pass me the joint. And I'm like, I really just, like, don't want to smoke with you. I thought it was, that was desperate to me.
That is a little desperate. I'm that's like, more than a little desperate.
Please don't.
Like, you're like, I get it. You're cool. Like,
I get it. You're cool. I don't want to smoke with you, though. I just don't know. So that is my desperate deed. It was going to be something different. But I'll save that for another episode.
But I, like, we stayed on. We had a topic this time.
Love it. Yeah, maybe they need to be topical. So. So are you guys ready? Because love is in the air.
Love is in the air.
Season 1, episode 14, turn it on. We're going to go hang out, watch the episode, and we'll be right back. But you know the safety drill.
As always, buckle up.
Buckle up.
Season 1, episode 14, love is in the air. Gabby learns a thing or two about pride after firing her maid, Yao Lin. Rex finally reveals his kink to Bree. She hesitantly agrees to participate. After Lynette's kids are caught stealing, Lynette ignites a war with her neighbor, Mrs. McCluskey. Susan panics when she overhears that Mike wants kids. After getting shot while investigating, kids are the first thing from Mike's mind. When Paul has Felicia over, he realizes she might know too much about his late wife under her alias, Angela.
I love a good Valentine's Day episode.
I do too, and it was episode 14.
Oh my gosh, I didn't think about that.
I doubt they did that on purpose. It probably just happened to fall.
I wonder close if it to Valentine's aired Day. On Valentine's Day around that
I'm
time.
Curious, but yeah, it's probably close.
I love a good holiday episode of anything, really.
Me too.
Like Thanksgiving. I actually like Christmas one. I'm not a Christmas person, but I like a Christmas episode.
Christmas episodes are always fun. They put a lot more effort into those.
They do. They have a big budget. The Lizzie McGuire Christmas episode
classic.
With Aaron Carter.
Classic.
Yes. This wasn't on that level. But this was pretty good. A lot happened.
As a lot
always.
Does happen. Yeah.
But I feel like we made some progress. There was theft. Somebody got shot.
Someone did get shot.
Trying to think of what else happened. Yeah, we're gonna go through it. So basically we start up top with our classic Mary Alice Young introduction, and it's about children, and I've noticed that they do children shit a lot, because there was another one a couple episodes ago where like Julie is yelling at Susan, and that's the intro. This one is Lynette and her kids, and Mary Alice Young says, children are a gift from God. The gifts children give their parents are less than heavenly. And Lynette knows this because she suffered through their kindergarten art gifts, their spice racks from camp, and the jewelry made at the Scout Jamboree. And you're seeing all these horrible things. And we've all made our parents those shitty things.
Yeah.
My mom kept them.
Literal garbage glued together.
My mom, like, puts them up still sometimes. That's impressive.
Yeah.
So now she got one that she wasn't embarrassed to display, and it's a gardening pot. And I think the gardening pot's kind of ugly, personally.
I did not like it. I was would like,
never
okay.
put that on my front porch.
I think she just liked it because it was intact and, like,
it wasn't as shitty as all the rest yeah. of the things. The bar is really low.
Well, in that one episode where she was drinking out of that mug that was, like, leaking.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of cute.
So at least this is, like, to put together.
This is nice. So she said that, and she puts it on the porch. She's like, this is the nicest thing ever. And I want the whole neighborhood to enjoy it. And Mary Alice Young says she was going to cherish the moment of that. Mary Alice Young says she was going to cherish the memory of that moment until it was ruined the very next day. And we see this chick is coming by to take it back. This chick is literally on her porch, like, looking at the thing and, like, taking it. And Lynette runs out there, is like, what's up? And she says, your boy stole this. I got it in Costa Rica. And Lynette's like, no, there's some huge mistake. And she says, Cat got your tongue. This lady is sassy. She says, Cat got your tongue. Keep your kids off my motherfucking property. She doesn't say motherfucking, but, like,
she wanted to. If this was on, like, HBO, she would have said that.
And then she's like, look. And she turns over the pot, and it says, like, Costa Rica 2001 or whatever. And Lynette is defeated and is, like,
like, embarrassed. She's embarrassed as hell.
Embarrassed as hell. And then she says, some days you wish you could return your kids, even if they are a gift from God. And that's where the intro ends. So mm-hmm. we see that there's theft going on.
Yeah.
We cut to the intro, and we come back, and then we realizes the day before Valentine's Day. Mary Alice Young says, day before V-Day, and every man on Wisteria Lane is prepping for this dangerous holiday. And I'm like, that's a good way to describe it, actually.
Yeah. And it was fun. All the men were very in character, I feel like.
Yes.
Like, Tom scrambling because he forgot, like, not knowing what day it is.
Carlos writing love you on, like, a blank card.
Yeah, Mike making dinner plans.
Yeah, Mike making a res, and then Rex came home with, like, flowers and hid them. They all suck.
Honestly, none of those were very original.
None of those were great. Actually, they all blew. So Carlos is writing on, like, a card. And I said, Carlos has a tattoo. We see a tattoo on his arm.
Maybe that's why Gabby likes him.
Whoa, he's a bad boy.
He's a bad boy.
Candy, like we said, there's candy, a reservation, Tom forgot. And the girls forgot because they learned about a secret in their neighborhood, and they're out chatting about Zach and Paul. And then we see something truly shocking. It shocked both of us. Do you want to say what it is?
Oh, I was like, wait, what? Gabby's fucking hair. Her hair.
Yeah, did you guys notice when you watch? She has bangs.
It's not even like, I don't know how to describe it, because they're the loudest bangs I've ever seen. They were like, she has bangs. I was like, whoa.
It was in all caps.
I was shook. I'm like, haircut? Turns out she's always had bangs, folks. Not to, like, jump ahead here.
Yes.
They just style them 100% better every other time she's on the fucking screen. But for some reason in this scene.
Oh, my God. It was shocking. It's jarring. I couldn't focus on anything else.
No.
They have a whole conversation. I'm like, Gabby has some bangs?
No, and she already has that kind of whack, like, layered bushy haircut that Erica is, like, famous for.
Yeah.
And, like, the bangs just made it so much worse. I was shook. I was upset. I was uncomfortable. I didn't want to look at her. Yeah. She's normally so hot, but I couldn't even look at her. I couldn't take her seriously.
No. I don't even remember what she said. I completely ignored it. I wrote notes about what everybody else said, and I just said, Gabby has bangs now?
I don't even know if she talked. I was throwing up inside my brain.
Oh, she says, Gabby. Oh, I said, Gabby feels sorry for Paul about the kid dying, about Dana dying. They're talking about Dana.
No one buys it yet again. No one buys Paul's lies.
And, like, Lynette forgot that Oh, no. And then the baby's there. This is another thing that shocked me. The baby. Lynette's baby. I forgot that Lynette had a baby.
Yeah, she has a tiny baby.
They're, like, passing the baby around, talking about Paul's dead baby. Mm-hmm. And, like, oh, my gosh. So, yeah, that happened. Bangs, there's a baby. Gabby feels sorry for Paul. Susan doesn't. And Susan still feels like there's something wrong. Why are there no pictures of Dana around? And then Bree says she knows that Mary Alice Young loves Zach more than anything in the world. And when you love your kid, you'll do anything for them. Mm-hmm. And Lynette's like, boy, do I know. My kids are kleptos, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's where we end up with the girls together. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're together the rest of
the episode. They don't get back together after that.
No. Yeah. So, well, with all that talk about Gabby's bangs, let's just fucking talk about Gabby. Because the next scene...
I mean, and her story was weird and short, so...
Yeah, the next scene, her bangs are styled correctly, mm-hmm. and it doesn't look like she has them. And
they're just kind of like, almost like a side bang, like...
I had bangs last year. You remember.
I liked your bangs.
You were nice enough to say that they didn't suck. I had a mental break. I feel like that's the only reason you ever get bangs. You're like, down on your luck, and you're like, what might change it? Some bangs. Growing them out and styling them like Gabby has in this scene, the next scene, that's your only saving grace.
Yeah.
When they're, like, here. They're, like, at your cheek. And you just part them a little.
That's like curtain bangs.
Hated my bangs. But Gabby's looking better now we see her.
Yeah, the rest of the episode, she looks fine. I don't know what the hell happened in that first scene, but whatever.
Yeah. So, what's, like, our through line here with her...
Like, what?
The summary. Do you have, like, a summary of what happened?
So, basically, Gabby, in the first scene that we see her in, she's yelling on the phone with the lawyer, and while she's doing that, her maid is, like, cleaning, scrubbing the floor in the background. And she and the maid are kind of getting sassy with each other, and it culminates with the maid, like, kind of popping off on Gabby and telling her that, like, she, like... her beauty will fade, her youth will fade, and at that point, like, what does she have? And
yeah.
And then Gabby fires her, and it's kind of a great scene, because she's like, you're fired. She's like, obviously. Like,
yeah, the maid is like, I give a fuck. This is how you should leave a job.
Yeah, and so then we get a couple scenes of Gabby, like, working at a mattress store as, like, a model on the bed, which I've never seen ever.
Yeah, they, like, stroll her through the store, and she's like, so where's the photographer gonna be? And the guy is like, what photographer? Like, sex sells, baby. Yeah. We're trying to sell sex. She's like,
you're gonna be in lingerie right here with strangers.
She's literally in this, like, silk lingerie set.
Crazy.
And then she's like, there's a montage of her, like, in between people, like, with these young boys coming by and checking her out. Mm-hmm. There's this crazy montage of just her laying on these beds.
It was weird. And then the last scene in the mattress shop, basically she, like, makes a sign that says don't talk to the model, and it pisses off the mattress store owner. And she literally says to his face that she thinks she's better than him because she's a model. And he's like, fuck you, dude, you're out. So he fires her. Yeah. And she immediately backtracks. But it's like, I don't know what she thought she was doing saying that shit. And then the last scene we really get with her is she's at a makeup store and she realizes she can't afford anything. And then she ends up getting a job there. And Yao Lin, the maid, comes in and Gabby does her makeup. And we actually have this really great, like, throwdown scene where Gabby's like...
Yao Lin sits down in the makeup chair because this is where she buys her makeup, apparently. Gabby is doing her makeup and, like, has this monologue. And she's making Yao Lin look like shit.
Like a clown.
She literally puts blue eyeshadow on her. And,
like, pastel blue.
Cherry red lipstick. Like,
it was horrible.
And she's, like, the whole time just talking shit. The monologue is, like, I don't even know what the monologue is. Like,
she basically goes into depth about how she came from nothing once. She'll do it again. She knows what she's capable of, and how Yao Lin's, like, biggest dream in life was to have Gabby serve her, but that's such a small goal.
Yeah, she says, our difference is in our dreams.
Yeah.
This is just a blimp on my radar. I pulled myself up from nothing once, and I can do it again. And it won't get any better for you than it is right now, Yao Lin, me doing your makeup. And I'm like, this bitch is crazy.
Yeah, so this episode, that's, like, probably the only scene where I was like, yeah, I like you, Gabby, because I really don't like the way she talks down to everybody in the episode. I like that she gets humbled a little bit because, yeah, she's had her beauty and money to throw around, and all of a sudden she doesn't have the money part, and life's a little more difficult.
Yeah, I like her. I actually don't. I don't know. how I feel about this. I would have liked her if she sucked it up and, like, apologized to Yaolin, but she doesn't even apologize for being a bitch for so long.
She treats Yaolin like low-key. There's, like, weird racial undertones, I felt like, in that bathroom scene, like, where she was saying stuff like, scrub it now. Like, basically talking to her like she's an indentured servant. And I was like, this is very strange, and I was like, dang, Gabby's kind of a bitch for this one. Yeah. And then the way she talks to the mattress guy, like, he was nothing but, he was nice to her. He was not mean to her. She didn't have to take the job if she didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
And, like, he was not mean to her in any way. So for her to just be like, yeah, I'm better than you, I'm a model, I'm like, yeah, but look at, yeah, how could, like, she honestly say that?
I don't know. And he's like, you're not a team player. You're not even nice. You've been rude since you got here. You're a diva.
And he's like, I tried to give you a chance, even knowing that you were a diva.
That guy currently makes more money than she does.
Yeah.
She's
mattress stores, like, make, people that sell mattresses actually make good money.
Have you looked at the cost of a mattress? Expensive as fuck.
And they're cheap to make. Like, there's a huge, like,
surplus.
Like, margin of, yeah, whatever it's called.
Profit margin.
Profit margin. There we go.
I thought this was a moment for Yaolin when she walks in and sees Gabby working this lowly job.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yes, Yaolin, this is their moment. She's slaying, but I would never let Gabby do my makeup. I can't believe she sat down and let Gabby do her makeup like that. So I don't know. I don't like that Gabby talked all this shit, like, gave this weird pep talk. I feel like she could have been cooler.
She's very entitled.
Yeah, a little bit entitled still. Do I like that she pulled herself up by the bootstraps? Yes. Do I like that she's mean to Yaolin all the time? No.
No, I don't like that she's mean to people. I don't like the idea that she thinks anyone's below her because she's a model. I'm sorry, but, like,
she's, like, 5'2".
Like, well, okay, you're a model. That's great. That just means you're prettier than a lot of people. Like, what else?
Whatever. I see models every day.
Yeah.
They're not. I don't know. I would rather not be around models than be around models.
Like, the whole thing was just, like, kind of pathetic for her to talk that way to people.
Yeah.
I don't know. And that's literally her entire story for the episode.
Yeah. So, like, she comes home to Carlos, but, like, and hugs him and is like, yeah, babe. And then, like, looks at herself in the mirror. That's what I said. That's what I noted. Which, that's the end of her storyline. So.
That was the whole thing.
Yep. That's Gabby. We don't see her bangs come back because she realized.
I was waiting for it the whole episode.
She's already going through a lot. She doesn't need the bangs back. And other than that, I'm trying to think of the weakest link here. But it might be Lynette. Lynette isn't the weakest link. She has quite a storyline. It's not. So, yeah, Gabby's is not about love, as you can see. It might be about loving herself or finding a way to love herself when she's not who she thought she was. Maybe it's a lesson about learning to love other people. I don't know, but it doesn't really fit in with the rest. But Lynette's is about love, but we take a long road to get there. It's, first of all, about thievery and her klepto children. So, after that intro scene, we see Lynette laying out different things on the table. There's a quick scene with Mike. The kids are hiding from Lynette. She's screaming and running around looking for her kids. They're hiding over at Susan's house. Mike gets them out and walks them back over home. And that's how this starts happening. Lynette was looking for them because she wanted to spank them. And she's laying out different things on the table.
We know she'd never spank her kids, though.
I was kind of scared. I was like, damn. No.
Lynette's one of those moms where, you know, if you touched her kid, she'd fucking bite your head off. I didn't buy it for a second.
I bought it because she's like the belt. And then she has, like, spatulas. Like, she has all this shit. I'm like, oh, my God. I got spanked once in my life.
Me too.
With a hand.
I got spanked because I was crying and hyperventilating. So my mom spanked me to get me to snap out of it.
You're like, and now I still have anxiety.
Yeah, now, like, if you raise a hand at me. No. It scarred me.
I don't remember why I got spanked, but I know that I never fucking did whatever it was again. Because I was so young that you're so impressionable, and that's where these kids are.
But that's where the spanking is, like, it works, if, I guess, if it's, like...
Yeah, you can't be spanking,
can't be,
like,
doing it all the time.
You can't be spanking, like, your 10-year-old child. Like, no, you got to be spanking them when they're, like, 3, because they don't understand
life.
You
can't do it too much or it won't work
anymore. No, you only do it once, so you better choose wisely. I can't wait to have a kid and, like, be discussing this with you, when I should spank him once. It's going to be the best conversation. So... either way, she's laying the shit out. She's going through it. And the kids are begging her not to be spanked. And she's saying she's going to let them choose. And she's mad that they stole, but even more embarrassed that they stole. Like, more mad about being embarrassed. And that my parents were that way a lot. Not about stealing, but they were just embarrassed by me all the time. And she's like, I won't spank you. This is the deal. Unless you swear across your heart that you'll never steal anything again. And then you write an apology and I'll let it slide. And the kids like are like, where's the pen? And they start writing. And I said, do they even know how to write yet?
I know, especially the way she's like, dear Mrs. McCluskey. Bitch, they can't spell that shit.
I can't even spell
this. My notes, I think I spelled it differently like 4 times.
I said this chick a lot. I was like, this lady, the neighbor. But Lynette's like, do you know what psychological warfare is? And they're like, no. She's like, great. And then Marilyn Young says, it's often said that good fences make good neighbors. And cut to, oh, her saying, Lynette was about to discover the fences needed barbed wire if they're between her house and Mrs. McCluskey's. This time, Mrs. McCluskey is just straight up walking up their stairs. Lynette is, like, doing something, and she walks over, into the house. And this chick is just breaking on their stairs.
Yes. Wisteria Lane. People are just walking in and out of people's houses, apparently.
She's on the stairs, walking upstairs, and Lynette is screaming at her, and she's like, your boy stole my wall clock, and Lynette's like, are you sure? Once again, they apologize for stealing the flower pot. They swore they wouldn't do it again. And she's like, Lynette is freaking out. She's like, get out. And then Mrs. McCluskey is like, whatever. These boys would be better off if they were raised by wolves. And like, Lynette is upset about that. They have a scream match. And then,
oh, she says, no offense, but you should be sterilized.
Oh, I didn't even catch that one.
She says that to her at one point.
I mean, yeah, this is the classic.
Which is a savage line. Like, yeah. I'm obsessed with that line.
Maybe the truth. They'd be better if you were sterilized. Oh, my God. So then next time we cut to the neighbor harassing Lynette again. Mrs. McCluskey is back. And she says, the wall clock hasn't come back. Tell your little criminals to get their bikes out of the street. Oh, because the bikes are on the street. And Tom is around, and Tom's like, I got this. And Lynette's like, I don't need your help. And Lynette starts, like, fucking yelling at the lady.
And she's like, ask or say please.
Say please. And this lady's like, yeah, fucking right. And this lady runs over the bike. Not once, but 2 times. She fucking drives over it, puts that shit in reverse, and drives back and looks out the window and is like, please.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Savage move. I am in love with Mrs. McCluskey. And then Lynette, Tom is losing it because Tom's like, that $400 bike just got destroyed. I know.
Tom's like, God damn it.
Because my wife is crazy. And then Lynette is like, shut the fuck up, Tom. And she has a carton of eggs because they were like unloading groceries, and she just motherfucking eggs the car. She eggs the car.
And then eggs McCluskey in the face.
Miss McCluskey puts it in park and gets out and gets egged in the face. And Tom is sitting there just like, Tom is just empty inside. Mm-hmm. Everything has been sucked from him. Next time we see Lynette, she's on the phone with the insurance. Because she egged this chick's car, and I'm surprised to get charges pressed against her or whatever. And Tom calls her outside, and he's, like, in this little toy house. And he's like, look what I found. And it's literally, like, tons of stuff from the neighborhood, including the purple wall clock that Lynette egged some lady over.
Yes.
Lynette is like, oh, my God, we have to move. And she's I would have done the same thing.
I don't know what I would do. I'd be like, fuck, we're just going to bury this shit, and we're going to pretend the boys didn't do this.
Your kids are going to grow up on that lane. They're going to grow up there. And, like, they're going to always be remembered as those kids who stole everything, and how could you ever be trusted
who
again?
Who terrorized the neighborhood.
Oh, my gosh. So that happens, and then Tom is like, you got to go over there and apologize, return the clock. And they talk about this over a V-Day dinner, which is unromantic.
At their own home where they're dressed up because Tom forgot to plan anything.
He's in a turtleneck.
I did notice that. I'm like, oh, turtleneck. Interesting choice there, Tommy boy.
I have not seen a man in a turtleneck, like, ever in real life.
No.
Maybe. I can't think of one off the top of my head. It's not, I don't know how I feel about it. Maybe at a holiday party you can wear a turtleneck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's where I've seen a man in a turtleneck. And that's the only time it's appropriate. That's the only time I want to hook up with a guy in a turtleneck.
some body types also just shouldn't wear turtlenecks. Oh, like, you gotta have a good neck length. You gotta have a good
neckline. Yeah. So he's wearing a turtleneck. And he says, being a good neighbor means apologizing. And it's like, when that's like, why can't we just be even? And Tom says, so the being a pleasant human being argument doesn't fly here. So I guess we have to choose self-preservation if we're going to stay on this lane. And she says, he's arguing, like, what if we wake up and our house is on fire? Like, would she call 911? And I guess that's a good question.
Like, yeah, I mean, he's basically telling her, like, when we need something, we don't want to be alienated by our neighbors.
Yeah, he's making a good point. And Lynette caves. And then he ends it by trying to get laid. It says, because Lynette says, whoever came up with the motto, love thy neighbor, like, never met her. And he's like, what about love thy husband? And it was kind of smooth. It was kind of smooth. Next thing we see, Lynette marches her little boys over to Mrs. M's house to return the clock. Mm-hmm. And she's like, get inside. I have tea on. And the boys go inside. And I said, Lynette's hair is looking good here. She has some good hair. And
I also love that the boys are dressed up like it's Easter Sunday.
I know. They're dressed up so nice. And Lynette's like, I'm good. I'm going to stay outside. So once they're inside, Mrs. M offers them peanut brittle, like an old Broadwood. And she says, give it to me. They're like, we're sorry. And she's like, don't you know this feeling's bad? And they're like, yeah. And she's like, how old are you? And they're like, 5 and 6. And she says, your mom just pops them out, doesn't she?
I know. Even when I was thinking that, though, I'm like, damn, okay.
They ask her how old she is. And she says, what do you think? She says 150, which is pretty cute. Mm-hmm. And then she says, eat the peanut brittle. And then these kids are nosy and they're like, who's that kid? Because she has a picture of a kid on her fireplace. And she's like, that's my kid. And like, where does she live? And I'm like, these kids are way too into your business.
I know, they're nosy as fuck.
And she's like, he passed away when he was 12. And he was a terror, like, you three are. And he would have liked you. And then she gives them a little pep talk that, like, nobody's going to love you like your mother. And I'm getting emotional.
I got emotional in that scene, actually.
I, like, almost cried.
And then, yeah, when they leave, like, there's the voiceover from Mary Alice, which we can kind of go over at the end, too. But basically saying, like, the thing that connects Lynette and Karen, like, they don't even know about each other. Like, I guess Karen knows, but yeah. Lynette doesn't know. But they're both prickly. Like, they're both kind of the same personality. Yeah. Like, I could see Lynette being like that when she's old.
Lynette would run over a bike.
Yeah. No, and it's just, it's like, sad, but also very, like, real. Like, no, of course Mrs. McCluskey wouldn't just broadcast to everybody that her son's dead. So, like, of course Lynette doesn't know that part about her. And, but, like, it's almost like Karen McCluskey, like, she likes that they kind of have this back and forth.
I think she enjoys it, because I think once you lose a child, like, you just enjoy, like, the memory of mm-hmm. them, hopefully. I mean, you're saddened by it, but, like, having little kids around will hopefully make her remember the good days with her son. Mm-hmm. I think she enjoys it, even though they're little brats.
Yeah.
She's like, she would never have had them in for tea and peanut brittle if she didn't actually, like, enjoy what was going on. Mm-hmm. It was so cute, but it was emotional. And then Lynette goes over to Susan and she says, my kids have been, like, thieving stuff on a thieving jag. Mm-hmm. They're being punished, but I need you to see something. They stole this from Mike's garage from inside his workbench, and it's Mrs. Huber's jewelry. And Susan's like, is that blood on it? And Lynette's like, I don't know.
Lynette almost looks like she's smirking in that scene.
Lynette was living on cloud nine. She's like,
this is some tea right here.
Something to distract from my children being hellions. Yeah. Like Mike. So that actually is a nice segue. We can talk about Susan now. Mm-hmm. Because you know that her and Mike are doing something wild. Like, you knew that they were going to just, like, have an event happen on Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah.
So she runs over and gives Mike a Valentine's Day card that she made, which is cute because she's an illustrator. So
all she wrote in there, though, was be mine.
It was stupid as fuck. I have never written something so, like, impersonal on a card.
You know what his card said back? His card,
I love you, I think. Just said I love you.
It just said, yeah.
No, my cards are, like, letters. I'm but like, the way she,
not to jump ahead, but this card situation pissed me off because they're both acting like it was so thoughtful. And I'm like, I guess Susan's is because she made it. But yeah. Mike literally wrote, love you. And she was, like, gushing over it.
I would have a full-out, like, yelling match about that card. I'd be like,
what the fuck is this?
I'd be like, nothing else. Like,
terrible.
Not even a personal... nothing. Not even, like...
Why even get him a card at that point? Like, write a little... a full sentence.
Just leave him a post-it. Like, you don't even...
I was just like, I get that he's taking her out to dinner, but if you're giving a gift or a card and there's no gift, then you better write something in there. You know what I mean?
Nothing. Do they even like each other? No, they still don't even know
each
other.
They love each other, Julia.
They said it like 2 weeks in. I just feel like it was too soon. Okay, so either way, these cards, this card exchange happens. And I said once again with the third person because she says like, guess who it's from? Or like, oh, whoever sent it must really love you. And I was like,
just not say, that much if that's all they're writing. I'm sorry. You. I will die on this
Why
hill.
Why are they in the third person again? It's from her. Either way, it just, my next note is it just says be mine. Lol, I would never write such a vapid card. So I wrote down. Okay, so they made reservations at some pretentious restaurant. Then they see Lynette yelling at her kids. Okay, this is when it all happens. Mike brings the kids back over to Lynette's. But while he does that, he makes like an off-the-cuff remark about like, can't wait to have some of my own. Literally didn't even think about it. This guy wasn't like looking at Susan like, can't wait for us to have kids. Like he just said, can't wait for kids one day. And Susan like... everything in her world collapses.
She literally collapses. Like, she trips and collapses.
You see, like, I wish they should have put some effect on this, on the camera frame, like, where it's, like, just, like, shaking everything else.
Just the
they
sound blur of the alarm bells.
Yeah, that's what her face looked God. Like. She's like, kids, I can't have any more. And so Susan goes to who else but Julie to talk about this.
She, like, busts in her room with laundry and then goes, Mike wants to have a baby.
Yeah, Julie is like, okay, like, yeah. Why are you telling me this? And Susan... says he has that look all written all over his face that he's ready. Point me to the next cervix. And Julie is like, what's the problem? And Susan's just like, I can't do it. I love you, but I went through a lot to have you, blah, blah, blah. And Julie's like, you and me both.
Julie's like the easiest kid of all time.
I know. And Susan's like, I can't lose him, but this feels like a lot. This feels drastic to have kids. And then Julie's like, I bet he'd rather have you than a baby, which is nice of her to say.
But Julie's right. Like, they have to talk about it. Susan doesn't even want to talk about it. I'm like,
Susan has not even discussed it with him yet. Hasn't even mentioned a kid. And she's over here like, he's going to break up with me. And I
feel like if he was that pressed about it, too, he would have brought it up to her. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. There's a certain point I've heard and read and, like, talked about with people where if you're at a certain age and you really want to have a kid, like, you start just, like, telling people that, like, date one or two. Mm-hmm. Because you don't have time to waste. No. And I respect that. So if he was like that, he would have done it.
Exactly. They're in their, what, mid to late 30s? Like, he would have brought that up if he it was, like, a deal breaker. Something.
And then Mary Alice Young says, Susan shouldn't have been so worried. Kids were the last thing on Mike's mind. And he's, like, he's too busy searching for answers. And he's looking in all the wrong places. And he's, like, at some person's house. And he's, like, dropping off plumbing cards. But then he'll, like, break in the back door. So we see this, like, a montage of this. Kind of. Mm-hmm. And then he gets into one house. He's like picking locks, which is kind of hot. But
he's got that bad boy, I'm like, whoa, but also nice guy thing going at the same time.
Skill. Yeah.
Okay.
So he's picking locks and then he goes upstairs and he opens the door to a room and this guy is like shaking, like with a gun pointed at the door, and shoots him twice.
I know. Shoots like the whole thing of bullets at him.
Yeah, he shoots a bunch, and then he nicks Mike once. But Mike is able to, okay, this was hot as fuck, too. Mike runs out, shot, gets in his car, and speeds the fuck away.
I know. And then he's just, like, bleeding out, he's and bleeding has some crime out. Doctor come.
Yeah, some under-the-table doctor comes over and, like, stitches him up.
Mm-hmm.
And the doc is, like, he's on it. And he says, no one wants answers. And, like, how could a girl from such a good family get involved in this? And then the pic of Deidre's back where Mike's looking young and hot at a frat party.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mike says he's found info and found out that Deidre rented a room on Pine Street.
Which is where he was breaking and entering.
Yeah. So he's, like... he's making progress. He's not fired completely.
Yeah.
And then Susan calls to leave a message, and she's like, I know you're home. We need to talk, and it's really important. And actually, I'm just going to stop by. And Mike picks up so quick, and he's, like, struggling through a man doing surgery on his, like, lower intestine right now. And he's like, hey, Susan, I just have a buddy over. And I'm like, has Susan even met his friends They've never met friends. They're not that close.
They don't have a life.
Yeah. And he's like, let's just talk at dinner. And I'm counting the minutes, babe. And the doc is like, take it easy for a few days. And he's like, I can't or she'll get suspicious. And I'm like, what?
You know what's more suspicious? A wound bleeding out from your stomach.
I'm like, what a healthy relationship. I have to suffer through this dinner with a bullet wound.
Yeah.
And then next time we see them, they're at dinner. Susan is wearing the shortest dress of her life.
I can't even express. I just forgot it was a podcast and you can't see my facial expressions. Yes. Her dress was so short.
The shortest, slinkiest silver dress. Like, the shortest. Like, it's a shirt. It's a tank top.
Almost looked like lingerie.
It was crazy.
Like, I was like, this just looks like a slip.
Yeah, it looked like a slip. And
she looked hot, but I was also kind of like...
For a nice dinner. Restaurant? No, that was a Vegas club dress.
Yeah.
Jordan's going to Vegas next week, and I expect her to be wearing that in the club.
I do have a dress about that short. Yeah. That is backless and black. That's kind of what I was thinking, too. I'm like, okay, where do I get one? Yeah. But also.
Also, everybody could see her cooch, especially this guy that's under the table. And there's a guy under the table, like, fixing it. She sits down, and he's like, what's up? And then she screams, gets up, hits a waiter. Like, obviously, just a typical... Susan moment. Mm-hmm. Everything runs haywire and Mike catches some woman like in the process of this and it opens his stitch and he starts bleeding everywhere.
Basically his blood just gets pumping because like the whole situation. Yeah,
but also I think wound opened when he caught her, so like it's flowing out of him. And Susan reads his card that just says I love you or whatever and is like, thank you so much, it means so much. And then she's like, we gotta talk about something. And Mike is like half passed out at this point. He is bleeding out, like I said. And the other day when you said you wanted kids, she says, I'm just not ready. And Mike is like one-wording her hardcore.
He like gets up to get out because he's like bleeding way too much.
Yeah.
And she stands up and is like thinking that he's storming out because of this conversation.
She says, you're leaving and you're not even gonna try to convince me to have your baby.
She's like, how did you know I wouldn't cave? I always cave.
Yeah.
I'm like, now that's a desperate deed right there. That was a desperate
And Mike faints there. Mm-hmm. So next thing, Susan is at the hospital. She overhears the nurse and the doctor discussing the sketchy gunshot wound. Mm-hmm. And she's like, what? She's looking pensive.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes to talk to Mike, says, sorry, I ruined dinner. And she says, so you shot yourself? And I'm like, what? Did he say he shot? I don't even remember what she heard, but she just assumes this maybe.
She hears the nurse and the doctor talking and they say the story seems weird.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And he's like, I was cleaning my automatic and I was too embarrassed to tell you and I couldn't ruin Valentine's Day, yada yada yada, but I heard what you said about kids. And she's like, let's not talk about that now, because she's sketched the fuck out. Mm-hmm. She's like, I don't want to have your kids anyway. And he's like, I just want to be with you, and if that means not being a dad, that's cool. And I'm like, that is a big concession to make.
He like loves her.
Apparently. Yeah, so he said, I mean, if I'm stupid enough to shoot myself. And Susan's like, okay, I'm going outside, I'm gonna let you rest, this dress is so short. Like, he's like, thanks for being understanding. And then she leaves and the police go in there to interview him.
And then we cut to the scene that we already talked about where Lynette brings her the jewelry. So yeah. Not only is she sketched out by this whole gunshot wound, now the jewelry situation.
So Mike is not looking good right now.
No. I mean, we at least know that he didn't kill Martha. So we have that going for us.
Yeah, we know that. I do still like Mike.
I do, too. I love Mike. I know, even if he had killed Martha, I'm kind of like, good riddance. Like,
I like him. You love him.
Yeah, I do.
But I like that. Okay, I don't know how I feel about his concession of kids here. But he's got bigger fish to fry, so I'm not going to worry about that too much right now.
I personally think that, like, in his mind, it's like, yeah, kids would be nice, but it's not, like...
not a deal breaker.
I feel like if he wanted kids really bad, he would have impregnated someone at this point.
He's hot enough. He fucking would have just done it.
Like, I just feel like... I feel like he's being genuine. Like, I think he's saying, like, no, if, like, you were down to have kids, I'd happily become a dad. But, like, if that's a deal breaker, then whatever.
A Susan Mike baby would be real hot, though.
It would be
a cute kid. Next, we have, last but not least, Bree. And we catch up with her at the therapist, which is where she should be because she took Rex back, it sounds like.
Yeah, so they're, like, together.
Yeah, so apparently they're just together now after that weird episode where they were at the diner. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
A lot apparently happened there. But Bree is talking to her therapist, and she tells them that they're going to host this dinner party. And the therapist is, like, naturally very almost confused by, like, this turn of events, just like the audience.
He says, "You're a couple again?" And we're like, yeah, what? Apparently. Like,
but he, like, straight up says, like, "What about the cheating?" And she's like, "I'll forgive him in maybe 20 years, a few decades past, blah, blah, blah." And he's like, "How could you, like, want to live unhappy like this?" And then they get onto the topic of, like, she confesses that she thinks, like, Rex is still withholding something from her. Mm-hmm. And she realizes that, like, the therapist knows what it is. It's something to do with the sex life. We all know that it's the he likes to be dominated, but Bree does not know that yet.
Yeah.
And we get one of my favorite lines in the episode where she says all this and says she's willing to, like, settle to be with him. And the doctor goes, "You'd settle for that? A life full of repression and denial?" And she goes, "And the dinner parties."
Oh, that one? Yeah. We're wasps. This is what we do. Not acknowledging the elephant in the room is our forte was a great line.
There's a lot of good lines in their story. I have a lot of quotes I wrote down.
Yeah, the worst part about being separated is not being able to throw dinner parties is another good one.
There's some good stuff. But yeah, so after she talks to the therapist, we cut to a scene of her and Rex chilling in the living room, talking awkwardly about Valentine's Day.
And yeah, they're, like, sitting all the way across from each other on the couch. He's reading a paper and she's knitting.
Yeah, and she basically is like,
she's like, "V-Day's tomorrow."
Yeah, he's like, "Roses and English toffee, like we always do." Ugh. And she's like, "I suppose we'll make love tomorrow night." And he's like, "That is our tradition." And I'm just like, this is painful.
That's my worst nightmare of marriage. When I imagine what I don't want, it's like that.
I don't, me either. No. And so then Bree brings up how she doesn't want, like, Rex to keep withholding from her. Mm-hmm. And he finally does come clean and tells her that he likes to be dominated. And he goes, "I like to be dominated." She goes, "Huh?" And he's like, "Sexually." And she goes, "Huh?" Like, she is not grasping what this means.
She keeps going, "Huh?" And then Bree comes back and says, "I want to understand." And I was like, yes. I did, like, a round of applause. Yeah.
So then they watch porn together, I guess. Like, that's what I assume they're watching.
He's, like, red and sweating.
And after watching that, Bree turns to him and goes, "What on earth did your mother do to you?"
I know.
She's very judgmental. And to be fair, I guess if you're, like, so far removed from any sexual quote-unquote deviancy, like, this would be pretty shocking.
This would look crazy if you just, like, never or didn't grow up in an open. I don't know.
Or I guess, like,
I'm not, like, crazy. I don't.
Well, she, like, the internet was relatively new when this was happening. Oh, yeah. So maybe, like, she didn't grow up being able to just, like, be exposed to shit like that.
Also, if you're just a wasp and you're unaccepting of, like, different sex.
And, like, getting porn, like, what was she going to go buy a magazine? Like, fuck no, Bree wouldn't do that. So it's kind of like, I kind of get it. But at the same time, like, I don't know. But she slaps him.
She says this has childhood drama written all over it.
But yeah, so they get into a fight and she slaps him. Yeah. And Rex definitely is turned on by it, but doesn't express that.
Yeah, he says, "I want you to try it just once." And he's like, "Why?" "Just to feel the pleasure." Slaps him and she's like, "Was that good for you?" And I was like, kind of savage.
I know.
If you're going to do that, yeah.
But then, like, it cuts to another scene and they're in bed together talking and they bring it up again and basbasically, she's, like, open to it, and Rex gets super fucking excited, whips out a box of toys.
Yeah, the box in the closet.
Okay, Bree totally would have found that shit. Like, it was not hidden well. And she cleans all their shit.
The box. Yeah, he whips it out. He's like, "The handcuffs." He pulls out some handcuffs. He's like, "These. Let's start with these." And she's like, "Can I run them through the dishwasher first?"
Which, like, I feel that, especially since he was cheating on her.
And then that safe word, they come up with a safe word and he's like, "Well, I like to use Philadelphia."
This pissed me off.
And then she says, I have an aunt that lives in Philadelphia and I don't want to think of her. And I agree with her. I'm like,
no, if I were her, I'd be like, I don't want to use the safe word you've been using with some other woman. Yeah.
And so then she suggests Boise and he says, "Boise, like what? Like, that's so corporate or something like that. It's so silly."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, it's another city.
Well, what? He just thinks the word sounds goofy. And then he's like, pick something more serious. And she's like, Palestine. He's like, we'll stick with Boise.
Yeah, which, like,
very of the moment, by the way. Like, yeah, I was like, whoa. Like, but, yeah, I don't know. I liked this story. I thought it was fun, like, them getting to, like, experience that. I thought them watching, like, the porn together, I was like, That's pretty hot.
Okay, that's like, yes. I think that's hot. I don't think there's a problem with it. Apparently, every guy I've ever met thinks there's a problem with it.
Watching porn together?
Yeah, I've suggested it like a bunch of times. I've never watched porn. That's my secret. I've never watched porn.
You've never watched
porn? I've never watched porn.
I've
never watched porn.
Ever?
Mm-mm. I've seen like a vibrator commercial or like... It's an ad that was on a VHS, like, one time at a weird party I was at.
I've watched porn, like, sporadically. Never, like, I'm not super into it.
Yeah.
But
I've never watched it. Throughout life. And, like, I always suggest to, like, people I date that I'm like, it could be cool if we do that. And every guy I've ever dated has been like, oh, I don't know about that.
It's because they don't want you to see what kind of porn they like. That's the problem.
I just don't think it's that weird.
But I feel like they probably are, they think that you're going to, I don't know. My current boyfriend and I have talked about it, and we'll probably watch porn together.
Yeah, I thought I got close to my last one, but.
No, me and we've talked about what porn we like. I think that's honestly a really good conversation to have with somebody.
I think that's totally normal to talk about it.
Because I think you should know, like, what gets them going. Like, what do you like to watch? Like, okay. And, like. I don't know. I think it's cool. I've never done it with a partner, but I want to.
Yeah, like, I've always wanted to because, like, I've just never watched it. And I'm like, I don't see the point of watching. Like, I don't see myself, like, doing it alone. Mm-hmm. So, like, why don't we do it together? But, yeah, I think this was a cool storyline. I like that Bree met him halfway. Mm-hmm. I like that she's trying. A for effort.
Yeah.
And I like that he's being a little bit nicer to her.
He's being really understanding when she's, like, taken aback by things.
Yeah.
And I think, like, he is being patient with her when he's, like, talking to her about the stuff. I don't know.
I think he
didn't get
better.
Mad that she was upset.
Yeah, he didn't lose his shit about, like, running through the dishwasher. Mm-hmm. So.
Or when she slapped him.
Yeah.
He kind of just took it and was like.
I like this version of Rex right now.
Me too.
This Rex is the first all of a sudden time he's 14 episodes I've liked Rex.
Yeah. No, I like the way he handled things.
But. We get a Mary Alice outro. Mm-hmm. She says it's impossible to grasp how impossible love is.
Wait.
Hmm.
We missed a plot.
Which one?
So Felicia accidentally gets...
Whoa.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
Really okay, quick. It's big. Short. Yeah. So we could get through it real quick. Basically, Paul had a standing order with the florist. They accidentally get delivered to Felicia, Martha's sister. Felicia brings them over. And this is where we find out that Mary Alice died 4 months ago, apparently. So I don't. We've talked about the timeline issues.
Plot twist.
John was 16 when the show started. He is now 18 years old.
Or plot hole, should I say.
Yeah, they definitely aged up the kids. But
so, yeah, Mary Alice Young died 14 episodes ago, episode one. Mm-hmm. John was 16.
Julie was 13.
Now they're both, like, a year older. 2 years old. John is two years older and moved out and maybe graduated high school. We don't know.
And I would say Julie is at least in high school now. Yeah. So she's 14, 15, so which is more plausible, but not
time
quite.
Is flying.
But basically, she notices Mary Alice's picture on the fridge and she goes, oh, that's Angela. And Paul, like, is visibly disturbed
Paul's
by this.
Like, Angela who? Yeah, don't know any Angelas.
Yeah, he plays it actually relatively well.
He steps in front of the picture. He's like, what picture?
Yeah, no, he's like, what are you talking about? So Felicia's just kind of like, okay, that's weird, whatever. So she goes home, and later we get another scene where she's, like, going through an old scrapbook, and it turns out that she and Angela were, I guess, nurses together.
At the Dorothy Drake Rehabilitation Center.
Yeah. So they work together.
And the book says family on it, though, which is weird. Because it had labels on it. Like, one was, like, vacation, one was family. Huh. So she pulls out the photo album that says family, but then it's, like, this weird picture, so.
So we get that. So Felicia now knows that Paul's either lying or Mary Alice had a twin. I don't fucking know. Like, I don't know what conclusion she's come to, but it's probably that Paul's lying.
Yeah. Ooh, a twin action? Could be cool.
But, yeah, so that's a fun little step towards the whole Angela thing. We haven't really heard that name in a hot minute.
Yeah, it's been a hot minute.
And, yeah, so now we're starting to get a peek into what maybe Martha Huber
knew.
I don't know.
Maybe they were related. I don't know.
Never know.
But, yeah, the Mary Alice outro says it's impossible to grasp how impossible love is. It can stain us through trying times. And I think we see Gabby and, I wanted to say Rex, but Gabby and Carlos. It can motivate us to make extraordinary sacrifices, and we see Bree pulling out the handcuffs from the dishwasher. Mm-hmm. It can force decent men to commit dark deeds. I don't even know what we saw there. Maybe Paul, maybe Mike, or ordinary women to search for hidden truths. And I think that's where we see Susan just being desperate to like know more about Mike. And then long after we're gone, love burns in us and we see Mrs. McCluskey, which melts my heart. And then we long for love. And after we found it, some of us wish we hadn't. Oh, that's where we see Susan because she found love and now she's all distraught about Mike. So that's where we end up. And I think for a Valentine's Day episode, which we don't see a ton of on TV, this was a great one.
I really enjoyed this episode. It was fun and stuff happened.
Yeah, I was on along for the ride. There was never a moment where I was like, what's up with my phone? Mm-hmm. Like, what can I
do? Yeah, I was zeroed in.
I was in it. And I feel like all of them had some cool stuff happen to them. They had depth. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm going to say we should do a fuck, marry, kill.
Okay.
Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I have mine locked and loaded.
Okay, you can go ahead.
So I'm going to have to fuck Susan because she looked really hot in
the title dress. Oh, my God. The dress.
I'll give it to her. I'm going to marry Tom. He was a good voice of reason when dealing with Lynette. And I'm like, you know what? That's some stable-ass behavior that I want in my life. and Tom's just a cutie. Stable. Tom looks good. Like, I don't know.
He did. I like him. The turtleneck wasn't horrible on him.
No, but the way he just, like, handled that whole situation, like, I like how he handles Lynette because Lynette's a very strong personality.
Yeah.
And I feel like she'd walk all over him, and she kind of does. But I almost feel like he kind of lets her and knows where to put his foot down, which was with the situation. He's like, without telling her you're crazy, he's like, you're acting crazy.
You're being crazy.
And then I'd kill Gabby. I'm sorry. I just really didn't like how she was speaking to, like, the people. I was like, you know,
I'm glad because for a moment you said like you liked her a lot in this storyline. I was like, I don't know how I feel about her.
Liked her speech at the end, but it kind of lost any, like, it canceled out because of how she spoke to everybody in the episode.
Yeah, I agree. Like, although she's making some sacrifices and really, like, pulling herself up and, like, taking one for the team because Carlos just can't fucking work, I guess, and they have no money, like, she's being a bitch to everybody about it.
Yeah.
So I think those are great picks.
Thanks.
I love a stellar all-star team there. Yeah. I'm going to choose to marry Mrs. McCluskey.
Okay.
I think, like, just, oh, my gosh, she has, like, that energy where she would take good care of you.
She'd be making you hella, like, peanut brittle.
I mean, I see the way that she loves her son, and, like, it melts my heart. I just, like, oh, my gosh, I was all about it. I would also fuck Susan.
Yeah, she looked really good in that dress.
Mostly because I already saw her vagina.
Yeah.
And then I would kill Mike, not because I don't like him, but because if anybody ever gave me a card that just said something as anonymous as love you, I would kill them.
Like, add one more sentence. Anything. Personalize it.
I would kill him, like, in real life if that were the case. Yeah. I'm going to kill him in my fictional game. So that is my fuck, marry, kill choice there.
Okay.
And should we do Apple rating or Housewife of the Week? What do you want to do first?
We can do either. Housewife of the Week. I got mine ready. I don't know.
Oh, who's your nomination?
I'm going to nominate Brie because she was open to doing the domination. And even though she freaked out, she came around. And I have a lot of respect for that because it is, like, goes against everything that she is as a person.
Yes. I agree. I can also add Rex to that. I think they can get a duo award this week.
House couple of
house,
the week?
Housewives of the week. House he can be week, housewife I because I think he also is being really nice.
No,
and he's being patient and he seems to be, like, making sacrifices. Does it erase everything he did? No. But
it's an improvement on both parts. It's an
improvement for both of them. They're meeting halfway to be, like, a functional couple right now.
They're, like, actually making headway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. Let's give it to both of them.
Love it. Brie and Rex, the Vandecamps this week. And for the Apple rating, I'm ready. I'm ready since we turned it off. Okay, so 3, 2, 1. 4.25. Oh, my gosh.
I was going to say 4.5, too, but
I was, like, up there, and the only reason I chipped off the 0.5 is because Gabby's storyline didn't have to do with love, really.
There's not really any substance there.
No.
That, honestly, her whole storyline could have been, like, two scenes.
Yeah.
And then they could have done more with that.
So it made me sad that it didn't fit in with the rest. Although I liked her storyline on its own, I think it would be great for a different episode. I wanted to see a Valentine's episode where Carlos is out of jail and, mm-hmm. like, they have to do it at home and, like, they're not used to it or something.
It was an odd choice to not have Carlos really in this Valentine's episode.
Yeah, except to see his sick dad.
Yeah. So. I don't know. That was an interesting choice. I docked up points for that reason as well. Overall, like, it's a good like I said earlier, I think it's a really good episode. I really enjoyed it. It just wasn't, like, a top-tier episode for me.
Yeah.
I like the introduction. I guess I'll give this away. Karen McCluskey does come back into the play, so I do like that she's here.
Oh, my gosh. I like her so far.
Yeah, no, I like Mrs. McCluskey. For some reason, I didn't think we met her until season two, so I was really excited watching this episode. So I always like when we get added characters. I think we got good movement with the whole, like, Felicia recognizing Angela and, like, a little more there. And I do like that they threw, like, a real wrench into, like, Susan and Mike, because I think this is going to lead to
more. I think they needed that for their relationship, honestly. There was too much smooth sailing and not enough getting to know each other.
Yeah, but, you know, I think overall, yeah, 4.25, good episode. I don't really have anything outright negative to say.
No,
but it was just like,
just wasn't there. Yeah. Something missing.
Yeah.
Well, dang. I'm ready for the next episode. I'm ready. I hope you guys are too. I hope you guys are.
We set up, like, a lot of good stuff in this episode.
I hope you guys are following along and enjoying it, mm-hmm. or catching up or rewatching. I hope you just are having fun with this.
Yeah.
And other than that, I mean, just all the normal stuff we bother you to do.
Like, subscribe, follow, rate, review.
We appreciate it so much. We love seeing when you guys, like, follow us. Like, we do stalk you a little.
Yeah.
I do look. I'm like, who is this person?
Like our post, comment on them.
Message us.
Yeah. Do whatever. Communicate. We love that.
Yeah, we had somebody say they related to one of our desperate deeds.
That's what I want to hear. I want more of that.
Yes. So we appreciate it. And we're just happy that you're here with us. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, on Wisteria Lane, I'm having so much fun.
I know, we have to go do the studio tour at Universal now so we can get a picture of us.
We, like, live.
Wisteria Lane is there.
We go Instagram live.
Yeah, like, I feel like we have to now. We went to Saddle Ranch, everybody.
Oh my gosh, and now we're gonna go back. Yeah. Because the bowl wasn't working in working order.
No, but it was super cool and I want to go back. And now we got to go to Universal just so we can get, like, an awkward photo of us on the tram.
Yeah.
Like, with Wisteria Lane in the back.
Yes, and it's hot girl summer. That bowl is gonna be working, the things are gonna be running, the trams,
we're gonna become masters.
Our boyfriends are picking us up. Okay, well, with all that being said, you know what the words of wisdom that we leave you with:
know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.